Hi, Leanne.
Hi, Chris.
This is weird.
Yeah. Where are you, Chris?
I am no longer a runner of NYC. I have escaped New York, and I've been holed up in Princeton, New Jersey for the past week. This is pretty crazy. Unprecedented, for sure. How have you been?
I've been good. It has been a little less jarring. I've had to go to work every day this week. Today is my first day working from home, so I've just been going in to work like normal, and I've been run commuting to and from just so I don't have to take the train. But yeah, now it feels kind of weird that I'm not going into work, but I'm working from home, so definitely different.
Wait, so how has that been? I've been out of the city for the past week. What is the, I guess, like, climate been like in terms of just like the amount of people that you've been seeing on a day-to-day basis out on the streets?
Well, I don't know how the subways have been because I've been avoiding them, but what I've noticed is when I run home, there are more people out than I'm used to, actually. Like, it feels more crowded, probably because no one's physically at work. No kids are at school. Everyone's out walking their dogs or walking or running. I think people are doing okay at not running with other people. I don't see many groups. I don't see many more than couples. So, but it's been weird because I'm like, I thought we were supposed to be holed up inside and I'm just trying to get home and I see hundreds of people outside.
Well, we could definitely be doing better, I'm sure. Is it mostly, like, when you say people are out and about, are they, like, clumped together? Are people spaced out? I mean, the whole thing is we should be, you know, a social distance from someone else. But every time I've been out on, like, this path here, like, there will be couples who are obviously together. It's really hard to separate couples. But you're crossing over bridges to get from Manhattan to Brooklyn. What does that look like?
I think people are distancing themselves. I think, like you said, it's mostly if people are together, it's couples or friends that are walking, but they're maintaining a distance. It's just there. I think there's just more of those people out. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not that more people are behaving badly. It's just that there are more people that want to be outside because they don't have to be at work, you know?
Do you still feel good about running outside?
Yeah, I feel fine. I mean, there've been a lot of people running, but it's mostly just singles and you kind of like give them a nod when they pass. It's like, yeah, yeah. Like everyone's got headphones in cause it's like, you can't talk to anyone. You're not running with anybody. So you're just like, everyone's kind of in this together. And every person that I pass running, I'm like, you know, what's up? Hang in
it's
there.
Funny because it's like, we don't want to discourage people from running. It's just sort of like, do it safely because like we're, I guess, about New York is about to go into some sort of lockdown state and California beat New York to the punch. And there were so many questions. Like our friend Gene is out in California, the former co-host of the show. And in San Francisco, you know, they ordered that people have a shelter in place, you know, policy. So the big question was, can people still get out for a run? And the answer is yes. Like people still get the chance to engage in outdoor activities, provided that individuals comply with social distancing requirements as defined in this section, such as walking, hiking, running, as long as you remain 6 feet away from other people, not counting those in your household. So this is so strange because we both belong to like a running club and just like 2 weeks ago, we were at a workout with like 200 people. And now it's like thinking about that going forward, it doesn't seem like it's going to be the new norm.
Yeah, it's weird. And it's weird to think that, yeah, that was only 2 weeks ago. And also that like maybe we were 2 weeks like too late to the punch. Like maybe that was just, you know, not great thinking back on it. We had no idea what we were dealing with. But yeah, it's funny to think that now, you know, I don't go out with anybody except Steve, who I live with. And yet 2 weeks ago, there's photos with like massive people sweating, like high-fiving, hugging, getting picked up, you know. I miss it, though.
Have you had the same sort of interactions now that you have to be inside for some of it? I've been watching like a bunch of movies and you cringe every single time someone is high-fiving or shaking hands. It's like how this we would not have been thinking about this a month ago.
No, not at all. It's weird. I think what that movie I Am Legend was on TV the other day and I'm like, well, this is nicely timed.
Yeah, I think there's some sort of apocalypse movie or some sort of like disease movie that's number two on Netflix right now because everyone is going home and watching that. What do you think is going to happen to this podcast?
We're just going to have to get creative. We can still, you know, as long as people are willing to talk to us over Skype, I think we'll be totally fine. We just have to, it won't be as like, I don't know. There's something about interacting in person that I think is so different than talking over the phone. And like, it's easier for you and I to communicate in person. And so with this other aspect, I guess you and I are going to have to get better. maybe yeah. You're fine. Maybe it's just me because you're used to this more than I am.
Yeah, so this will be interesting, but we're going to keep the show going forward. I guess, like, for a lot of people they want these podcasts to also be a little bit of an escape from the news, where you're hearing all these updates about how many cases there are in New York City, and, you know, by the hour that number changes by a lot, and, you know, so to kind of, like, get people's minds off things, I want to take a trip back to, what is it now, 3 weeks ago? And you running at the U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials. It's something that when you were a guest on the show in the fall of 2018, I believe, you had set out this goal of, you know, hitting an Olympic Trials qualifier. You did. You had a whole year to really train for this race. And it's been circled on your calendar for so long. Did the day live up to expectations?
Thanks for saying you had a whole year to train for this. And like, I didn't run as quite as well as I wanted to, but thank you for that whole year that I had to train for it. But I think I've been telling people that it's kind of like, it's like Christmas where you buy gifts for people and you're so excited to give them these gifts and you're like waiting for this day and you listen to music and you plan your vacation to your family. And then you get there and it's like exciting, but then it's over and you're like, now what? And at the very least, you're like, there's no day off of work until like Memorial Day. So you're in this like dead zone of depression. But so I don't know. I think it's such a, I don't know how popular or unpopular this answer is, but no, I don't think it lived up to expectations because I don't think it was possible to, you know, like the way that it was built up and the way that I kind of looked towards it and had it on my calendar for so long, it was like impossible. Maybe if I'd run better, maybe, but it was never going to be this like glorious firework, beautiful, like show of whatever.
So you hit your OTQ at CIM in December of 2018. And then after that, you were slated to run the Berlin Marathon in the fall of 2019. There was no spring marathon in 2019. You kind of get hurt. You still run Berlin somehow. and then after that, you'd start to train for the trials. How different was it training for that marathon as opposed to all these other ones? CIM, you were focused on hitting a time. Berlin is a flat, fast opportunity to run a PR, but you had hurt, so it was just kind of like, just get it done. Then you had to tackle this animal that just had the gnarliest hills I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think it was important to, it's hard to train for something if you don't have a goal, like no matter what the goal is, you know, like for Berlin, yes, I was hurt. So it was like, do the best you can with what you are given, you know, and even if it's, yeah, like in CIM, I had a time goal. So I wanted to have some sort of tangible goal to train for, because I think without that you're kind of lost as to like mileage and pace. And so I think my tangible goal was to place better than I was seated, and then to run a PR would have been great. I'm pretty notorious for not looking at any sort of course information at all. Everyone had been talking about the hills. I kind of had that in my head. Like, yeah, it's going to be hilly. I had no idea it was going to be that bad. I don't think anybody knew that it was going to be that windy. So those were kind of the ideals that I had going in. I wanted to place better than I was seated and maybe run a PR. So that kind of gave me a focus of how to train. You know, I kind of knew to place better than what I was seated, I'd have to run around this time, you know, or generally when Olympic trials marathons are run, sometimes they're conservative for the first half and then they get a lot faster the second half. So it was like hang in there for the first half and then, you know, make up ground on the second half. And yeah, it was different to train for this also because everyone, or at least the majority of local elite or sub elite women or however you want to call them in New York were also training for the exact same thing, which is pretty rare. I think never is everyone training for the same thing. So everyone kind of knew what you were going through because they were going through the same thing and they knew, they're like, yeah, you got a big long run this weekend, same. And so that was different. I'd never had that before.
I want to go to sort of like the week of the race. You start to kind of like lock in. Not too many people on the team see you very much. I mean, you'll show up to practice, but then after that, it was just like really getting into that mindset of tackling this race. What were the nerves like going into it? Because once you arrive in Atlanta, it's like every single trials qualifier was treated like a celebrity of sorts for that weekend.
Yeah, it was really different. I tend to get pretty bad pre-race anxiety. I mean, you know, before CIM, I was a nervous wreck and could barely function until the gun went off. So I think going into the trials, I was a little bit better. I was nervous, but I didn't know what I was nervous for. You know, like for any other marathon or for a marathon that you're going for a time, it's easy to know if I don't hit this time, I'm going to be really disappointed. Or like, I'm nervous because I want to hit this time. So for this, it was kind of like, I'm not going to place top three. So what am I nervous about? You know, like there's no negative that can come out of this. You know, you've trained really hard. You've put yourself in the best position to run well. You're going to show up. You made it. You know, like what's the downside? Like you run poorly, but you still made it, you know? So those were the thoughts that I was trying to keep in my head of like, you've already done all the work. This is kind of like, you just get to experience what not a lot of people get to experience. And you get to do it on this stage with, you know, 500 other women who are experiencing the same thing. And that's a really cool thing. And I think that kind of helped me be less nervous about the race and knowing that I wasn't going to win. There was no way. People at my job were like, there's a chance. Like, no, guys, you don't understand. But
the odds are so low.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, but you never know. I'm like, okay, guys. So that kind of helped. And honestly, once you get to Atlanta, I think the thing that helped me the most to not be nervous was just like link up with the people that you know, keep yourself busy. I was so lucky to have Gene there that we could kind of just be like, here's what we have to do today. We have to get our bibs. We have to get our water bottles checked. We have to get everything and we're going to shake out. And then that's it. You know, so there was somebody with me to take half of my nerves. And then I took half of her nerves and, you know, like calmed each other down. But I mean, I think it was more exciting than nerve-wracking the closer we got.
That just like, I was at the Omni Hotel and I could sense it. You could see it on some of these faces that these people were nervous. None of this was like infectious to you. I mean, we're talking about it, something being infectious, but nerves, yeah. Before the race, like just taking that elevator up and down, you were able to see people just, some people were crying. Some people were just like deadpan and silent. And like their faces were just flushed, like no color. What was it like seeing other people nervous for this thing?
I don't know. I mean, and to go back to how nervous I was to qualify, so how nervous I was at CIM, I kind of feel like I got that out where it was like, I, God willing, I will never be that nervous again. Like, I can't stress how nervous I was. So I think I've been through it and I kind of did it. And then coming into the trials, it was like, okay, I can handle this. Like, I know how to deal with my nerves. And I don't know, to see other people, to be nervous, especially if it was like one-on-one in the elevator or waiting in line for bottle drop. I guess my tendency is to joke around, and whether or not people wanted that or that helped them, I would just, you know, make a joke about something or other, you know, to kind of put them at ease and realize, like, I think for 99% of the women that were racing, we weren't necessarily competitors. We were more of like just racing together, you know, like, yes, there were the top 10 or top 20 that were really going for it and they were competing and they were going to, you know, kill themselves to make the team. And then the rest of us are kind of like happy, excited to be there. And really there was no reason to feel like they were competitors of mine, as opposed to just, you know, really successful women runners like myself from all over the country.
So before, you were a guest last time and hadn't OTQ'd yet. So there, you haven't shared the story of the moments before CIM. You found yourself, was it crying in a porta potty?
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll never be that nervous ever again.
I hope not. Yeah, I was just, I mean, and I didn't have the same, I knew of other women that were at CIM to hopefully qualify for the trials, but I didn't know them as well as I do now. And so I felt I was in elite warm-up area and there's people warming up and I'm just like sitting there by myself like, oh my God. And then I went in the porta potty, cried, had to talk myself up in this little like 6-inch by 6-inch mirror on the back of the door. It's like, come on, Leanne, you could do this. You know, you just have to run the damn pace, like my coach says. And yeah, I wound up linking up with some of the women from New York that were also running CIM. So again, like immediately upon finding those people that you know, it just cuts your nerves in half. You know, it's kind of like a shakeout of like, okay, here we go. Like, I know these people. I know what it's like to start the race. I know what it's like to hear the national anthem. I know what it's like to, you know, retie your shoes for the 10,000th time because you triple knot them again. You know, it's like the more familiar you can be, it helps so much. But yeah, a lot of tears, a lot of nerves for CIM for sure.
Okay, so we still haven't gotten into the race because you had to make one big decision before Atlanta, and that was all of a sudden out of the blue, Nike offers everyone a chance to wear the same shoes that Eliud Kipchoge wore during his sub-2-hour marathon attempt, the Chonky Boys, and they were offered to all the competitors, so you got to do a couple strides in them, but then you're faced with this decision of, do I stick with something I've trained with and I'm most familiar with from previous races, or do you disobey the regular rule of don't try anything new on race day? How did you come to the decision to try the best available shoes?
It was really a last minute decision. And I'm kind of surprised at myself that I made the decision to wear them, because I got them on Thursday when I got there and ran in them a little bit, hated them. Then did my shakeout in them on Friday. Didn't really like them that much. And I was like, why am I even considering this? Like, they are chonky. They're definitely chonky. And then I woke up on Saturday and I think the advice I got was like, just make the decision and then don't think about it anymore. Because the more you're going back and forth in your brain, it's just stressing you out. So I woke up, looked at them and was like, all right, we're going with the Chonky Boys. And that was it.
Do you have any regrets about it?
No, I don't think they helped or hurt in any significant way. I mean, the way that I look at it is I don't remember ever being in discomfort about the shoes. I was much more concerned with everything else that was going on. And even the pictures that were taken, you know, at mile 25, when I felt like I was moving backwards and like almost putting my hands on the ground to help me crawl to the finish line. Looking at those pictures, my form doesn't even look terrible. So if at the very least the Chonky Boys kept my form like in some semblance of proficient, like then they were worth wearing.
Okay. Now let's get to the actual race. There's a countdown that's like from 10 onward, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The gun goes off. And where do you find yourself? First of all, I mean, like, you and Gene were together for like the days leading up to it. Was there ever any sort of, I kind of like kept trying to poke at you to get your race plan from you and for you to tell me what you were thinking. Was there any consideration to running with her the entire time?
Yeah, we were going to try and link up and run maybe even 10 miles together, but she had a slightly faster qualifying time. So she got to start a little bit ahead of me. And Chris, you were there. You saw the amount of people. It was like a stampede of women. Just like there was no way I was going to find her in the first mile because it was so crowded. We were so close together. And I just never found her. But yeah, that was the plan. I was going to try and run with her for a little bit, but to no fault of either of ours, it just, we never found each other.
So then you take off. What's the first impression of like the first couple miles? Because did the hills just hit you guys right away? Like when was the oh shit moment?
I think the first mile is so crowded that I didn't really have time to think about much else except like, let's not take out five people trying to like take a corner or move to the right. We needed at least like 2 or 3 miles to figure out how we were all going to run this race and kind of form those little packs that I'm sure you saw mostly for the whole way. I think for the whole first loop, I was like, okay, this is going to be okay. And especially Peachtree goes up and back, and the up going out on Peachtree was really downhill. I mean, it was like a gradual sloping downhill. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be the recovery zone. And then we're going to turn around. We have to climb back up. But the climbing back up was so much harder than the down. You know, like you needed the down to get back up, but it was just so much harder to get back up and the wind. And so I think the minute I hit the uphill back on Peachtree on the second loop, I was like, this is not going to get better at all. I kept trying to stick with people because I think that helps so much. It's just like, oh, just hang on, just hang on, just hang on. And I tried to hang on to Veronica Jackson, who was on the podcast for a while. She had a great day and she kept moving up. And at a certain point I was like, all right, she's got to go. And she finished amazingly and I just couldn't hang with her. And I tried really hard.
She had the best day of all the New York City women. I think like she was the top finisher and we awarded her a little bit of a prize, for that. What are you thinking about in the race? Because it's like, it's very easy to get absorbed about mile splits, about, you know, how many people are around you. But like, where was your motivation coming from in terms of just like, this was a big race for you? Like, and like so much of the emotion led up to this, like where people traveled to see you there. You got to see them along the course multiple times. So where did your mind wander?
I think anybody that has raced knows that, you know, you go into it thinking, I'm going to use the people that have come here. I'm going to like use the energy and the people that are racing with me. And then the gun goes off and you kind of walk in and it does kind of all go away. So I think I was mostly locked in on how my effort was like, is this too hard for the beginning? You know, how does the uphill feel? How does this feel? And I think I consciously tried to like get out of myself and say like, okay, look up, here you are in Atlanta at the Olympic trials. Like, how cool is this? And I know I remember thinking it's absurd how many people are out here. Like, it was cold for the spectators and it was so windy, and there were like three people deep on each side of the course the whole time. Like, there was never a section of this looped course that there weren't people on. So there was nowhere for you to feel like, oh, no one will see me slow down here, or no one will see me walk here. It's like, no, people were there the whole time screaming at you, and everyone has their name on their bib, so everybody can yell at you. And I think when it started getting really hard, then I started relying more on, okay, let me just make it to this mile marker because I know that Chris is going to be there. Or like, I know that at the turnaround point, I'm going to see Ryan and Kara, our friends, you know, or like my parents are here and Steve and his parents are here. So I went, it got hard, and that's what I needed to lean on more so than at the beginning.
When was the last time you felt that sort of struggle in a race? Because like during New York Roadrunners races and like all the, like when you're just in like these lower pressure situations, like, yes, it's an all out effort for, you know, hitting a certain time or a place, like you're up there. But this was just like, at some point you started struggling, and that was rare.
I mean, it was rare in a different way. I mean, I think I kept saying once I finished, I was really surprised at myself that I had finished, and not in like a, I'm not looking for that, like, oh, but Leanne, you're tough, you knew you could. It's like, no, I'm very surprised at myself that I was able to finish because it was that hard. And I wanted to quit so bad. And I think, I don't know if I've ever had that hard of a race. I mean, Berlin was hard just because I didn't have a buildup and I was kind of hurt and trying not to overdo it. So that was hard, but this was like knockout hard.
Well, when you describe it that way, like, okay, people who are listening to this are familiar with running in Central Park. So put it in terms of just those hills and how taxing it was on your legs. What was it? Is it just like Harlem Hill 100 times, or, you know, in Prospect Park, that hill 20 times, back to back to back to back? What was it?
It was a mixture. There were some steeper inclines, and it seemed like the hardest hills were the ones where, kind of like Harlem Hill, where you go up and then turn and there's still more hill to go. And you're like, come on. You're like, come on. And then I think equally as hard are the like gradual uphills. So if you've ever run the New York Marathon and you're on Fifth Ave running up Fifth Ave trying to get to the park, and you're just like, how long can this possibly go on for? It was also like that. So it was hard. I mean, I think one of the hardest moments that Mary Wittenberg was standing by a water station on an uphill. And so they put these tables. I mean, in fairness, they had to line up like 50 tables for all of us with bottles, but it was like halfway up this hill. So you have to like go get your bottle and then finish the hill, and your momentum's thrown off and the wind is blowing at you. And you're like, where's my bottle? Where does this hill end? Why is this person filming me? It's crazy, but I guess that's Atlanta.
You ran 2:42 at CIM, you ran 2:46 in Berlin, and then this time around you run 2:49.26. But where does that rank for you in terms of just like your performances? Yes, you've got your PR, and yes, you've run like another faster time, but where do you hold this in sort of your resume of sorts, and when you look at your body of work in running?
I look at the trials as like the fact that I made it there, the fact that I ran, the fact that I finished. That's, I mean, and maybe it's just me being selfish and thinking, but I think that, you know, like if you make the team, then people remember and it's great. But people aren't going to remember the time that I ran or the place that I was in among 500 people. They're going to remember, and I'm going to remember that I made it there and I ran it. And so in some ways, it's like my greatest accomplishment is running in the Olympic trials. Time-wise, it's not going to look like that. But I think it's just the experience and the importance of the event was just so much more than a place and a time. And maybe that's me being like putting so much emphasis, like hindsight, because of course going into it, I had all these goals and now I'm like, oh, it didn't matter. I just, you know, just being there. But I think, I mean, it's hard to say that that time equates to the race, you know, like the race in itself was an experience, and to be there with all those women and to have trained with the women of New York City for weeks and feel like I had 25 to 30 friends going into this race with me from New York was worth more than what 249 means to, I don't know, in a result sort of way.
It feels like this race was forever ago, but it was only 3 weeks. I know.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I mean, yeah, it feels like it was ages ago.
When did you have the feeling of, you took a couple days, right? I think right after the race, you traveled out to Miami, but I guess maybe sitting on a beach or anything, were you just thinking like, what now? Like, what's next? When that question comes to mind, what's on your mind?
I think it was probably, I mean, and I said this to Gene and in the Kick newsletter that came out this past Monday, but right when we finished the race, I was waiting, and when I saw Jean and she came up and she goes, I just really want to run Berlin. You know, I can't wait. I just want to run Berlin. And I'm like, what the hell, Jean? Like, I don't want to see another running shoe ever in my life. Like, this was so hard. I don't think I could ever do this again. And then of course, like hours later, you're like, well, I'm going to do this again, you know, and I'm like, oh, New York Marathon, can't wait. But I think I really want to, I don't know, I want to do the part of running that was fun before the race, you know, like the training with other people and the meeting up. And I mean, hopefully we'll get back to that soon, but you know, like having a really hard workout and then going to get a beer or going to get brunch, that's why I run, and that's why we have Brooklyn Track Club, and that's why I had so much fun training with the women of New York City for this marathon, because I don't know, that's what it's really about, right? It's like the community and the people that you meet. And yeah, I'm gonna run another race. I'll probably run another marathon this year, but it's mostly about now, it's about getting back to what brings me joy in running, which is other people.
Are you ready to think about 2024? Because like, here's the thing, it's like, and I've talked about this before, maybe like when we had like the panel, there was so much that went into this race, and there were so many female participants in the race, where it's like you kind of have to keep in the back of your head the standard might change and they might make it tougher for the next trials. So how do you feel about that?
I welcome it. I think it should be harder. I mean, selfishly, I want something else to train for. Not that, I don't know, that I need somebody else to make a goal for me, but it's nice. I mean, for, you know, a good part of, I don't know, maybe 2 years, and I'm sure longer for other people, this under 245 was the time that they were aiming for. And that was such a hard line of like under great, over bad, you know, like I'm going for it. And so to have these, and for a lot of people it's a BQ, or for a lot of people it's sub 3, you know, we need these benchmarks in order to train for things and have goals. And so yeah, I'd love for it to get a little bit faster, to have something to train for, and some, I don't know, some crazy dream eventually to work at. But I think the one thing that I think about when I think about 2024 is I look at the women, the younger women, or like the women on Brooklyn Track Club that are coming, and like Erin Gregoire, sorry, I always say it wrong, Gregoire on our team, who qualified for the trials but wasn't able to run. And so I want her to come in 2024, and I want, you know, I want to come with teammates. I want to come with more women in New York City, and I want to train with them again. I want to have that experience. And so that's what I think about is more, yeah, I want to be there, but I want to be there with, you know, 10 other teammates, and for us to all have this experience that Jean and I shared together, you know, with more people.
This coronavirus thing is throwing a real wrench into those plans.
I know. I'm like, come on, guy, like community, let's, you know, and it's possible to have it. I think we've been really good about, we have like a Brooklyn Track Club women's group chat, and we're all going like, here's the workout I did today. And, oh, that's great. And posting and trying to keep in contact and trying to keep each other motivated and going through. And thank God that things like Strava exist that we can kind of, you know, even if it's just like a kudos, at least you're saying like, I acknowledge your run, you know, in some way. So we'll get through it. And then we'll be sick of each other again soon.
All right, Leanne. Well, this is great. It's good to catch up. We've got to figure out how we're going to go about booking our next guest over Skype.
Yeah. But
the podcast is back. And actually, you know, there's an idea here, sort of, now that we've kind of like have people's attention here. It's like, if you are like a local business, it's like a smaller business for sure, and needs some sort of help. Like, we had Wilson on right before all this blew up. And it was funny because when we recorded the podcast with him, he was like, oh, you know, it was like a relief not to talk about coronavirus because like this thing, like it sounds like it's going to get crazy, but it hasn't really affected Chinatown too much. Then shortly after we recorded that podcast and released it, it started to affect Chinatown. There was like a lot of xenophobia and just like sort of like, you know, misconceptions about Chinatown being the heart of this, this stuff in New York, which is not true. And now it's just affected the whole entire city. There's a lot of businesses that have closed. So an idea could be we interview some people who, you know, could use the help. We'll try and kick around some ideas. But the podcast is back. We're not going anywhere. We're just going to be doing this over Skype for a little bit. But
yeah.
All right. Leanne, go wash your hands and stay healthy.
Wait, well, Chris, before we go, we should. How's your running going now that you're out there in New Jersey? Have you been running every day?
Oh, yeah. I've been running every day. And I think like I am very fit right now, but it's just like it's just this weird state of limbo. It's like, what am I fit for? And you know, New York Roadrunners canceled all races through like March 10th or 11th, but that keeps Brooklyn Half. Oh, May 10th or 11th, but it keeps Brooklyn Half out there and open. And it's sort of like, I don't think it's a good idea to have 27,000 people racing the same race right after something like this, but it's still on the calendar, so I'm still going to train for it. And even if it gets knocked out, I will still be training. And my sights are set on the Chicago Marathon in the fall. So, you know, it's just over time. We're going to power through this. And I think I'm good. I'm healthy right now. We've got a lot of space, some great trails. So I'll be back in the city hopefully soon, though.
Great. Yeah, I mean, it's a good way to take a break, figure out why you run in the first place, you know, and focus on that.
All right. Take care, Leanne.
Bye.
That does it for this episode of the Runners of NYC podcast on the Citius Mag podcast network. A quick word from our sponsor, Fix NYC. They're located over at 206 West 23rd Street, but unfortunately, due to the coronavirus, they've had to also close their doors. However, Fix is offering a 15-minute virtual chiropractic consultation. All you have to do is hit them up on Instagram, Fix NYC, and give them a call via the contact button in their profile to schedule your own appointment. And they're reminding everyone to stay home, stay safe, and they will reopen their doors soon. So that does it for this episode. We will return to our normally scheduled programming soon. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, and on behalf of my co-host, Leon Sherrick, thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys soon.